I want to take a second to remind you to sign up for the Poso Daily Brief. It is completely free. It'll be one email that's sent to you every day. You can stop the endless scrolling, trying to find out what's going on in your world. We will have this delivered directly to you, totally for free. Go to humanevents.com/Poso. Sign up today. It's called the Poso Daily Brief. Read what I read for show prep. You will not regret it. Humanevents.com/Poso. Totally free. The Poso Daily Brief.
We are in a fifth generational conflict. For every lie they tell, we're gonna get in their face and yell two truths.
This is Human Events with your host, Jack Posobiec.
Christ is. We are king. Now being told that of the eight children that are reported to have been stabbed, at least three of those children are in critical condition. The alleged attacker in this incident is a Syrian asylum seeker.
An historic announcement by California Governor Gavin Newsom that could affect the entire country when it comes to gun control.
This is an existential crisis.
Right now, smoke from Canadian wildfires continues to blanket parts of the East Coast.
These kinds of weather phenomena are happening all around the globe, and it's only becoming more and more common, all because of climate change.
Without question, Hunter Biden was accepting money and peddling his father's influence, and I think much of that was illegal and hasn't been prosecuted.
Trump, I suspect, is popping champagne corks at Mar-a-Lago every time there's a new candidate.
I think the first thing we have to do is introduce ourselves to the American people.
And I don't know what President Trump is thinking about this, except that he's been a puppet of Putin from the time he was president.
President Joe Biden has been slow in providing military resources to Ukraine.
Ukraine's counteroffensive is already underway. The Ukrainian forces have begun testing Russian positions with artillery strikes and ground attacks.
Is the Department of Justice targeting Donald Trump for indictment, which would be the first federal indictment of any former president?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard today's edition of Human Events with Jack Posobiec. Earlier today, in Annecy, France, just south of Geneva, a Syrian asylum seeker charged into a playground and began stabbing children, toddlers in their strollers, parents, elderly people who were standing by. A mother tried to put herself in harm's way, shield her children with her body. But it wasn't enough. And the Syrian attacker stabbed these children in their stroller. Today is 8 June. 2023, Anno Domini. We just had D-Day, 79th anniversary, 2 days ago. The liberation of France. The liberation of France, 79 years ago. Well, how's France doing today? And I've been posting this video time and time again on Twitter, and for some reason, Twitter keeps deleting it. I've been posting it 3 times now. So here's what we're going to do, because we are live on Twitter right now. I'm going to play that video. We're going to play it in full, and we welcome it. We challenge you, Twitter. Censor this. So what you can hear there are the screams of the mother, blood-curdling screams of the children as they're being stabbed. It doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be this way. We don't have to live like this in the West. There are countries like Poland that do not have attacks like this and have never had attacks like this because they have never taken in migrants from the Middle East. And there's even a part of this, and for those that are listening on the podcast side that you can't see, there's actually a man. So there's two men, Frenchmen, inside the playground there when this psychopath attacks. One of them charges forward. He's got two backpacks and is swinging the backpacks, flailing around, trying to stop the guy. The other man, who's on one of the pieces of playground equipment, slides down the slide and runs away. He runs away like a coward, while women and children are screaming in terror as their babies are stabbed in a stroller in front of their eyes. Well, this guy runs away in terror. 79 years ago, D-Day, the liberation of France, to this, watching a man run away in terror while children and women are left to die. As of right now, none of the individuals, and we pray to God that it stays this way, as of right now, none of the individuals have been killed. I've been checking this every single day or every single second since this minute, this incident took place, since I heard of it. We are going to keep you updated on this if any of the situations do change. Some of the children involved are from the UK. One girl, one of the boys is from Germany. Two others are French. One, I think, is Dutch. And this is a resort area. It's a beautiful area. It's lakeside. It's in the Alps. This is just south of Geneva. It's a beautiful area, a beautiful place. But now it's been enriched. Look, it doesn't have to be this way. We can run our countries, we can run our cities in safety. We can do things to protect our citizens, or we can let the globalists do this and continue to do this to our countries. Here in the United States, we don't do anything about crime in major cities, and so criminals respond duly. They go out, and it's an absolute madhouse out there. Share a prayer for these kids, and for those of you who do have kids out there, give them a hug today and tell you you love them very much. We'll be right back with the latest in the Trump indictment case.
When I grew up in the hood, I rolled with Bloods, and them boys had a saying. You can't be listening to all that slappy whack, trimatazole, it's a bam ship, nippy bam bam, like Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
Okay, we are back. Mike Davis from, by the way, if I cough a little bit on this, that's because the smoke from Canada has made its way down to Washington, D.C. today. And we've got Mike Davis coming on right now from Unsilenced Majority as well as the Article 3 Project. I was outside for, you know, less than 10 minutes today because we woke up and the sky was like an apocalyptic orange, the same type of color that I haven't seen since I lived in Shanghai years ago. And it would be like that all the time, this sort of tinged haze. It's not like New York, but there definitely is something wrong with the air today here in D.C. Mike Davis, we've got you on. Let me just ask you real quick. Are you experiencing any of this? Have you gotten any of that?
Well, I spend about 90% of my time in Denver, Jack, and we have a different haze here in Denver, Colorado. It's not orange. It's more green.
Okay, so you're in Denver with that. Yes, wonderful. All right, right before we went to show today, Marjorie Taylor Greene just dropped a bombshell with this, and we're going to work to get her on. But before we can, we now know that the FBI informant who fears for his life, his or her life, we should say, the information that came forward, Marjorie Taylor Greene went into that skiff, came out, told us what's in it, and guess what? It's all about Burisma, the hiring of Hunter Biden, the putting him on that board, the firing of the prosecutor that Joe Biden did and then later bragged about. And, oh, by the way, this is the exact same thing that President Trump asked, wait for it, who was he on the phone with? Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky. It blows my mind. I was doing reporting on this 4.5 years ago, and it's the same names, and it's always centered on Ukraine. Mike Davis, walk us through the gravity of the fact that the FBI was already looking at this when President Trump was asking about it, but apparently didn't tell him.
Yeah, so we have this whistleblower who has been a whistleblower for the FBI for like 10 years, and the FBI has paid $200,000 for his whistleblower activity. So he's clearly a credible whistleblower. The FBI wouldn't have kept him around for 10 years and paid him $200,000. And he went to the FBI, it looks like in 2017, with very specific and credible evidence that then Vice President Joe Biden took a $5 million foreign bribe, it looks like, from Burisma now, based upon Marjorie Taylor Greene's reporting. And he took this $5 million bribe to get the Ukrainian prosecutor to stop investigating Burisma, where Hunter Biden and the Bidens have a financial stake. And if this prosecutor doesn't stop, if they don't fire this prosecutor who's investigating Burisma in the next 6 hours, this Ukraine's going to lose $1 billion in U.S. funding. And remember, President Obama specifically put Vice President Joe Biden in charge of Ukraine. So this is as bad as it gets. If these allegations end up being true, there is no chance that President Biden can stay in office. And the House Republicans should open an impeachment inquiry right now, because if Joe Biden has proven in the past that he can use the highest offices in the land, sell out America and put $5 million in his pocket, he cannot be trusted to stay in office right now as the president of the United States.
This is shocking to me, but in some cases, right, Mike, it almost feels like a broken record, because we have Joe Biden on tape, right, coming out and saying, I got this guy fired. Well, son of a, you know, he comes out and says it, he's bragging about it. Then we already know we've got the emails, right? But even before the laptop from hell, the hard drive from hell, even before that, a full almost 2 years prior, we've got all the public information that clearly looks like public corruption. This is something, by the way, even the New York Times, Politico used to cover all this. Then President Trump makes one phone call to Zelensky, one phone call, and asks him, he says, can you look into this? Because remember, and people forget about this, that when Zelensky first ran for office, when he ran against Petro Poroshenko, who was the prior president of Ukraine, this was the president that Biden was very close to beforehand, he said that he was going to clean up this corruption. So Trump is taking him at his word and saying, can you look into this? Because it looks like this guy, Mykola Zlochevsky, who is in charge of Burisma, has been bribing the Bidens and potentially other Americans. We don't know who. Mitt Romney's name gets thrown around in there. Devin Archer. We remember the entire cast of characters. The question is, why does that provoke such a response from the administrative state? And by the way, we remember the guy's name, Vindman, Alexander Vindman, goes on to destabilize our relations with Ukraine. Russia invades. Trump gets impeached. The whole thing goes back to this very incident, which apparently the FBI has known about since 2017.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't get worse than this. You have Vice President Joe Biden took $5 million to make the U.S. government put pressure on Ukraine to fire a prosecutor investigating a company that the Biden family had a financial stake in. That is as bad as it gets. And if that, again, these are allegations. If this ends up being true, if they can prove this, Joe Biden is going to have to leave office.
I don't see any other way around it, because here we are, and I want to ask you, we're coming back in the next segment about this, because of course Joe Biden and Hunter Biden, you know, they never seem to have any consequences for this. There's never any repercussions for their actions. The FBI has this information. doesn't do anything with it. And then Bill Barr is over and he's telling the Federalist, oh, you know, we sent it over to you. We sent it to Delaware for further investigation. You sent it for further investigation. It's been 6 years. It's been 6 years since the report came out. I was an intel officer. It doesn't take you 6 years to look into something like this. You can look at it very quickly and say, okay, was the money taken? Did the money change hands? You can pull the transaction reports. It's very easy to look up this kind of stuff, especially, by the way, if you have the resources of the FBI. It seems to me that they didn't open an investigation into this. They've been protecting the Biden family. And at the same time, they are going after Trump because he's been the one exposing this all along. And remember, the Clinton Foundation, their number one donor, their number one source of donations was from the oligarchs of Ukraine. And so to everything that's going on there, we have to remember how this all started. This is not season one of the movie. Stay tuned. We are going to go back, Mike Davis, to give us the latest on the Trump indictment, Jack Smith, all the rest.
When I grew up in the hood, I rolled with bloods. And them boys had a saying. You can't be listening to all that slappy whack, trim out his outlets, a bam ship, nippy bam bam, like Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
All right, we're on with Mike Davis. Mike Davis says that Joe Biden can no longer stay in office after we now know what this informant has told us. This is the same informant, by the way, that the FBI told Anna Paulina Luna that they were congresswoman, that they were not able to ensure his safety because of the information that he has put out. And certainly now we know that this ties back to a powerful Ukrainian oligarchs. It seems that the FBI actually for once was telling the truth. Mike Davis, though, why is it that all of a sudden, when this scandal has been bubbling up, Comer is putting pressure on, the entire House is putting pressure on, the FBI finally buckles last night, allows the Congress to go in there and see this, but suddenly, out of nowhere, Jack Smith reemerges and says, oh, he's sending out letters left and right. We're not going for the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act with Joe Biden and his family. No, no, no. We are going to go for the Espionage Act and President Trump. The timing on this is very suspect. What say you?
I mean, it's very clear that that Merrick Garland is moving forward with indicting President Trump for the non-crime of a former president having his presidential records and the office of former president that Congress funds and protects by the Secret Service and gives staff with security clearances and secure office space. That is allowed by the Presidential Records Act. Instead, they're going to ignore the Presidential Records Act and charge the former president under the Espionage Act, which is not even applicable to a former president's handling of his presidential records. The Presidential Records Act is. And they're going to do this while they ignore this bombshell career-ending evidence that then-Vice President Joe Biden took a $5 million foreign bribe from Burisma and when he was vice president. And then-Vice President Joe Biden bragged that he was going to cut off Ukraine's $1 billion in U.S. aid if Ukraine didn't fire this prosecutor who Biden at the time said was corrupt. It was actually Biden who was corrupt. And remember, the Bidens had a financial stake, a big financial stake in Burisma. So Biden was firing the prosecutor looking in to his own family's problems with Burisma, illegal activities with Burisma. This is as bad as it gets. This is part of a pattern, Jack. We know this. Remember, Hillary got caught in 2016 with her illegal home server as Secretary of State with our nation's most classified secrets hacked by foreign governments and probably including Russia, shows the Clinton Foundation's illegal pay-for-play foreign bribery schemes. And so what did the FBI and Obama and Biden and Hillary and the CIA and the AG do? They cooked up the Russian collusion hoax and the Crossfire Hurricane investigation to blame Trump. They're doing it again now. Biden got caught taking a foreign bribe, a big foreign bribe, and there's many more, I guarantee it. And they're now going to prosecute Trump for non-crimes.
And so walk us through this, because the piece of it that I'm still trying to understand, and I think the audience needs to understand, They've now opened a grand jury in Florida and a grand jury in D.C. They're investigating one set of incidents, but it looks as though the charges might come in two separate jurisdictions. Could President Trump and potentially members of his staff, advisors, lawyers, etc., that may be involved in this, could he possibly face two separate trials in two separate jurisdictions here?
It's possible, but I think what's more likely, and I could be wrong on this, if Jack Smith's going to bring these bogus espionage charges that don't even apply to a former president's handling of his presidential records, it's the Presidential Records Act that doesn't have a criminal component, and they know this. But if they're going to bring charges, they should be in Florida, because that's where the alleged crime happened. It wasn't a crime, but that's where the alleged crime happened. But what I think Jack Smith's going to do is indict in D.C., because you have the uniparty judges in D.C., the uniparty judges on the D.C. circuit, and you have a jury pool that's like 95% Democrat and 99.9% Trump deranged, right? And so if I were Jack Smith, they should bring the case in D.C., and what they're using the Miami, the Southern District of Florida grand jury for is maybe to gather evidence from Secret Service agents and others who can't easily leave Miami to go to D.C., and they can read that evidence to the grand jury in D.C. But they could bring separate charges. They could bring the charges in Miami. They could bring the charges in D.C. They could split it up. The problem that Jack Smith has in D.C. is there is a huge roadblock. There is a precedent by the D.C. District Court protecting President Clinton back in 2012. This Obama judge protected Bill Clinton when he had 8 years of audio recordings, highly classified audio recordings, in his sock drawer, 79 tapes, and Tom Fitton at Judicial Watch, our friend, sued to get these tapes, and the Obama judge correctly held that under the Presidential Records Act, it is the president's sole determination whether records are personal that go to him or presidential records that go to the archives that then almost certainly come back to his library. But the mere act of taking those audio tapes out of the White House when he left made them personal, according to this Obama judge. Well, the same thing is true with Trump. If he took his records when he left, they are personal records, and it doesn't matter whether they're classified or not. They're presidential records. He has secure office space in the office of former president. Jack Smith may be trying to avoid that precedent in D.C., so that may be the reason he wants to bring the charges down in the Southern District of Florida, Miami, where they're not bound by that D.C. precedent.
That's very interesting, because and we've just got about a minute left, but I agree with you that, you know, if this is brought in D.C., it's going to be the same issue as it was with Bannon, with Papadopoulos, with Roger Stone, with Flynn, etc. A D.C. jury is going to convict Donald Trump. It's as simple as that. If they bring it, they will indict him and convict him in D.C. I've sat through those trials. It is a fait accompli if they bring it in D.C. However, if they bring it in Florida, I would actually wager that a jury down there would probably be more fair, because you'd probably get an even split.
Yeah, and remember, you have to have a unanimous jury in order to convict, or to find guilty in the court to convict. So, I mean, it would be a hung jury at best. I mean, so no question Trump would get a more fair trial in Florida than he would in D.C. There's no question. And so, but it's not because if Jack Smith charges in Florida, it's not because Jack Smith is trying to be fair. It's because there's that 2012 Obama judge precedent that is in his way in D.C.
I think that's incredible. Mike Davis, thank you so much. Everyone go follow Mike, the Article 3 Project. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your continued service, Mike.
Thank you, Jack.
Look, folks, this is key. This is absolute key. The jury makeup of voir dire, could potentially determine the future of our republic. If this takes place down in Florida, then I would actually say that President Trump wagers a fighting chance. If it's in D.C., it's done. It is a fait accompli. He will be convicted by a D.C. jury. You can take that to the bank.
I'm always listening to Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
All right, folks, before we get to our next guest, I want to remind you about our partnership with our friends over at Allegiance Gold. Folks, we know that Bidenflation has been one of the number one issues facing directly to American families this entire year. We cannot stop Bidenflation on our own. We know that the spending and the printing of the Fed continue ad nauseum. That is why if you must go now, right now, protectwithposo.com. Get at your phone, and after you've subscribed to us on Rumble and Podcast, go to protectwithposo.com. You can now get up to $5,000 in free silver on a qualifying purchase when you sign up with Allegiance Gold. We cannot prevent the future from coming, but we can protect our families and our families' assets. Folks, I want to bring on to the show an old friend, a dear friend, someone who's an expert on all of these issues. It is Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. Tony, good to have you back on, man.
Jack, I always great to be on with you. Thanks for having me. It's been a while, so thanks for
It's been a minute. Well, we've got the live show up. We've got the format up. We're doing more guests. And I said, look, and I've seen you are out and about everywhere these days. I said, we got to get him on. We need Tony. Need Tony back in the mix.
Thank you.
Tony, before we get in, because I want to break down with you this Ukrainian counteroffensive, but can I get your immediate, I know it's breaking, immediate reaction to this press conference that was held by Marjorie Taylor Greene exposing this? This is the key link between Burisma and Biden that I think we've all been looking for years has finally come out. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is the one that actually blew the entire Burisma scandal, I would say, wide open.
Well, I admire the Congresswoman's spunk. I've actually done talks with her. As a matter of fact, we did the Lincoln-Reagan dinner at Tampa last year, not year before last. Time flies. She is dogged in her ability to go after things. And I think it's appropriate that she stuck with this and finally has been able to get some more information out. And let me be, you know, clear with you and the audience on this. It's long past time for this evidence that Congress has to be taken seriously and actioned by the Justice Department in some form. I mean, Jack, you know, there's all these rumors about Trump being finally indicted and charged with a crime and being, you know, let off in handcuffs. Yet we know for a fact, based on Congresswoman Greene's evidence and other things which have been revealed, you and I have spoken, you know, I had access to the Hunter Biden hard drive early on before a lot of other folks did. There's been ample and overwhelming evidence that Joe Biden is the big guy, that this corruption that Hunter Biden has is derivative of Joe Biden, not separate and away from him. And I think it's important that everybody look at what she said, look at what needs to be done, and find a way to force this issue forward in some way.
No, I think that's exactly right, because in a way, everything, you know, it sort of started bubbling up in end of 2018, then into 2019. Trump makes the phone call with Zelensky, and all of this plays out into destabilizing the United States' relations with Ukraine, ends up destabilizing the entire situation there, and then eventually leads us to the war, leads to Russia reacting the way that they did to everything that's going on. And so this idea that, oh, it's all just happening and it's this maelstrom, it's completely, you know, I'm not going to use the word unprovoked, but that's what they always say. They say nothing happened and they just, you know, Vladimir Putin woke up one day and decided to invade Ukraine. I think that's just not true. But I want to go to you for the latest, because I know you've actually been digging deep on this, and I wanted to get, you know, like as a Navy guy, you sometimes got to reach out to Big Green. So I wanted to get an Army guy out to explain this counteroffensive. First of all, has the counteroffensive actually been launched in Ukraine? Because the U.S. says it has. I can see when I go on Telegram and some of these other channels that there seems like a counteroffensive is going on, but Ukraine's denying it. What gives?
So just quick, a historic note, you know, Jack, when we had the Navy came up with the intel to kill Yamamoto, it was the Army who had to carry out that mission. Just saying, we had the P-38s to actually do the
here we go.
So
here we go.
It's always good to be cooperative. And again, that's a good point. Anyway, but to the point.
Joint operations.
Ukrainians, I think. That's joint operations. So this is the challenge we face right now, though, is that there's so much disinformation. You know, my job, as you know, is to call balls and strikes, not take sides. So both sides, Russians and Ukraine, engage in propaganda and deception. That's kind of the way they came up. They're cut from the same Soviet cloth. But I think at this point, the reason that you see the Ukrainians dogging the offensive, they're talking about it, they're saying they're prepared for it. They're not prepared for it because Joe Biden. Look, let's be honest here. The reason Putin acted when he did to invade Ukraine wasn't because he was ready. Clearly he wasn't. The entry into Ukraine was horrible. They got their butts kicked. The reason he did it, Jack, is because he saw weakness in Biden. Biden said, oh yeah, go ahead and do it. So essentially within the context of our parlance, he did a basic audible, basically decided to invade Ukraine because he could, not because he was ready, but because he could. So that, now 2 years, you know, going into the war, over a year and a half now, going almost into another 2 years at the rate we're going, Russia is right now, by the numbers, holding their own. And the support that Biden has been providing them is just not adequate. It's not adequate for two reasons. First, it's not focused. Simply throwing money at it, $113 billion, does not guarantee strategic success. Sun Tzu once said, the tactics without strategy is the noise before defeat. So you got a lot of tactics, a lot of money, but nobody actually knows how to put it all together. And secondly, the very things that the Ukrainians said they needed for the offensive, Jack, aren't there. You're talking about new battle systems, new capabilities, new technology, which you know as a Navy guy. You know, a ship has to go into combat with all of its systems fully integrated and ready to fight as a single entity.
And you got
to
train the crew.
Same in the
Army. Got to train the troops.
You got to train the crew. And they're just not ready. They've been training. Yeah, they've been training piecemeal. Think about this. They're sending all their troops all over the world to get trained. You don't establish unit cohesion. Could you imagine trying to run an aircraft carrier, Jack, and you sent some of your sailors off to Australia, some of to Canada, some to sub-Saharan Africa, and then you're going to put them back on a ship and go fight? It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
No, and I think look, even CNN, of all places, CNN has it out saying this morning that they're getting chewed up in this counteroffensive that they launched.
They are.
It looks like a couple of early waves that have come out, and now these tanks, these MRAPs, some German tanks that they've had, it's sort of this hodgepodge, as you say, it's a hodgepodge of NATO equipment, and we've got to come up on a break here in 30 seconds, but the Russians have had 8 months now to build their defensive lines, to build their minefields, to build up their artillery forces, and they've been sitting back and waiting, and now you have this Ukrainian force that's, and you can see the videos, they're just going across open fields, and it looks like an absolute shooting gallery. We're going to be coming back to Lieutenant Colonel Coney Schaefer. I want you to break down the tactics that we're seeing on the battlefield. Okay, we're back here, Human Events, with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. Now, Tony, I'd love to ask you, just on a tactical picture, what are you looking at on the ground when you see these? I mean, we're seeing armor columns now. I'm seeing some of these videos from the battlefield. It looks like armor columns operating with MRAPs, operating with, in some cases, infantry on foot that seem to be charging into these fields. And look, I was in Ukraine last year. This is all farmland. Yeah. There's no mountains. There's no mountainous terrain in these areas.
Right.
Obviously, we've seen the flooding, but this is sort of south and to the east of that area where it's just flat farmland. And it seems to me that they're charging headfirst into these minefields. What's going on?
They are. Yeah. So in the open steppe like that, unless you have battle forces the size, and for your audience to refer, I refer back to the Battle of Kursk. The Battle of Kursk was a massive meeting of two large forces during World War II. And basically, it was a very victory. Both sides lost huge amounts, but at least Jack.
And not far from this same area, not far at all.
Right. Exactly. And so the outcome of that was not favorable. I mean, yeah, eventually the Russians won because they had overwhelming numbers. They just beat back the Nazis. And I'm not comparing two sides to the Nazis here. I'm just saying if you look at what happened in that battle, I see something similar happening here. Basically, the Russians allowed the Germans all the time in the world to get prepared to do their offensive. And they did. The Germans eventually came and the Russians were prepared for them. It was a huge defeat. I see parallels to that battle. And again, I'm not comparing the Russians and the Soviets to the
Nazis, just the tactics. But what you are saying, though, in a sense, is that the Russians are using the same playbook they used in the Battle of Kursk. They were the ones who won that battle, the largest tack battle in history, on terrain that is not very far away from what we see right here, the same type of open roads where they built in. And it's this. Walk us through what's the concept of a defense in depth, because that's what they've used here.
Yeah, defense in depth, basically. And Jack, I don't know, you probably are too young to remember. We trained for that during the Cold War in the Fold the Gap, because we figured the Soviets were going to come across the Fold the Gap, and we had to basically do retrograde, setting up fire lines, if you will, on the way back. So that's what a defense in depth is. Basically, you accept the premise that you will not be able to stop your adversary's offensive operation. You just take that as as command guidance, if you will. And then you then do a series of planning exercises on a map, essentially, and you figure out logistically where you can set up essentially fighting positions that allow you to fight, take out some of the armor, some of the APCs out, fall back. And you do this repeatedly so that as you're falling back, the people on the offensive are being degraded. It's a great way of defeating a superior force by the fact you basically bleed them, you make them pay for every inch of territory they're gaining. Again, this is what I was trained to do as a lieutenant, as a tactical intelligence officer, is that we knew that we would not be able to stop the initial Soviet onslaught into Germany. Therefore, our job was to figure out how to bleed them. So this is what I see, again, the Russians doing, much like the Battle of Kursk. They accepted, and the other term is cauldron. They actually kind of let these things come into this big circular thing and have overwhelming fire in these lines. So the Russians are not on the offensive. They're allowing for these forces to come forward, to be attrited, to be damaged, and then fall back. So, again, I think the Russians are more than willing to trade terrain for killing and destroying Ukrainian equipment and personnel. That's what they're doing right now.
Look, and we're seeing some of this out now right now, and you notice it's the images that we're showing. These aren't the former Soviet material, former Soviet equipment from before. These are now, you're seeing French equipment, Swedish,
Western, even German
Leopards.
Yeah.
Even German Leopards that are now on fire.
So this is my other,
German tanks involved.
Right. So, and Jack, this is my other issue. It's like, you know, that you have so many, so much gear, so many different types of gear. The logistical nightmare I can only imagine for these folks. You know, this is a huge mistake. This is a tapestry of woke planning. You've got to have unity of command. You've got to have clear and concise command and control that allows for the precise application of force at critical times. Just throwing it out there, driving across open fields, is not effective. And so I don't know who's coaching or leading these folks, or if they're listening to those who, you know. Look, one of the guys I would have out there in the battlefield to win is Doug McGregor. Doug is a brilliant guy with armor, and he could tell you how to basically effectively put together armored brigades to effectively take on a larger force and win, which he did in Iraq. So I'm not saying you could not defeat the Russians, but you cannot play their game. And that's what the Ukrainians I see are doing right now, because they're poorly trained. They've been trained, but they're not trained effectively, using a multitude of different Western equipment that is not integrated. Jack, we knew during the Cold War we were going to have a heck of a time trying to integrate French units with German units, with U.S. units, all trying to do things in Germany. It was not an easy thing, and these folks have not been trained to do that, I don't believe.
No, and we know, by the way, that, of course, so much of this is about playing to this NATO summit that's coming up in Vilnius in about 5 weeks.
Right.
The first week of June is basically done here. It seems to me, and you know, this is more of the political strategic question, and we've got 2 minutes left, Tony. Are they doing this for headlines? Is this something that, do you think NATO and Biden are pushing them because they want a headline at that summit?
Absolutely. I think the Ukrainians are pushed now to go in when they're not ready, because Blinken has said that they need something. They basically have telegraphed this. Victoria Nuland has said flat out that quote unquote, the State Department, which is like, why would the State Department be helping the Ukrainian military plan an offensive? That's a mismatch. Just saying. People who are completely lacking of any military sense are the ones pushing for this. That is Blinken and the State Department. It's a witch's brew, Jack. Not going to go well for the Ukrainians. I feel for the Ukrainian people. It's going to be a lot of bloodshed simply to try to convince the rest of NATO that the Ukrainians have the ability to beat the Russians. And I think it's going to backfire in the Biden administration.
Well, look, and I'll just say, and I said this on War Room when I got back, that from Europe a few weeks ago, that we were hearing even from our sources in government there that even NATO leaders knew that it looked like Ukraine only had about one push left. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. Tony Schaefer,
yes, sir,
from the Loudoun Center, you're from everywhere. Where can people go follow you? Where can they find what you're working on right now?
Primarily right now, we're doing something at Project Sentinel, projectsentinel.net, looking at returning military strategy and congressional efforts to constitutional standards. So it's a worthwhile effort. That's what we're trying to do. So thanks for having me, Jack. Always great to join you.
Project Sentinel. Go follow Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. His analysis has always been spot on. And of course, now we're able to draw upon his tactical expertise on the field of battle as well. And I know, look, as a Navy guy, every once in a while, that's what they say. You go to the guy who's got the answer. So if I got to go to Big Green, I'll go to Big Green, because that's what a good intel officer does. Human Events coming back.
About the boring people at your office, I'm trying to listen to the new Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
When I look at those images out of Ukraine today of these armored columns being just completely lit up, you have to question, did they know this was going to happen? Did they know they were charging into a superior force that had the defense in depth? How do you tell a soldier to run across a minefield? What makes him want to do that? Did they actually believe it? We may never know those actual answers. But then I look at the United States as well, and I say, do we actually know what's going on in the halls of government? And here's my thesis. We do. We know exactly what's going on. See, here's the dirty little secret, folks. They don't expect you to buy all the gaslighting. They don't expect you to buy all the propaganda. They don't expect you to buy every new lie that they come up with. What they expect you to do is not do anything about it. What they expect you to do is sit on your hands and take it. When you see the images out of a playground in France of a Syrian migrant, an asylum seeker, stabbing children and babies in their stroller. And then the government turns around and says, we need to open borders and welcome more migrants in. They know that you can see what's going on, but they expect you to do nothing about it. When we can see the same thing happening on our southern border, which is being raped every day, tens of thousands of people pouring across. Even RFK Jr.'s down there actually calling this out, a Democrat calling this out. They know what's going on. Go look at the polls. 80% of America knows what's going on down there, but they expect you to do nothing about it. And so when people actually do start doing something about it, taking a stand, fighting back against this regime, fighting back against their actual crimes, taking millions of dollars from overseas, this isn't news. We've known this. We've known it all along. 4.5 years, I pulled it up, 4.5 years ago was my first report on Burisma and Biden. Nothing's changed. It's the exact same report. I could give you that exact, I think what we're actually going to try to do is pull that up. Go subscribe to Human Events on the podcast side, because we're going to pull that original report from 4.5 years ago and then release it as a podcast, because I want to see how many of those words from the initial story are still true today. Because we had the laptop, that proved it. We have him on tape. Now we've got an FBI informant. But I want you to understand, folks, I want you to understand. Your leaders are bought and sold. Your senators, your congressmen, so many of these people in D.C. I ain't calling out everybody in D.C. I'm not playing that game. But what I am saying is so many of these people in power are bought and sold. And if you don't think for a second that there isn't tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands in dollars of foreign money from the Middle East, from China, from Ukraine, the oligarchs flooding Washington, D.C., then you don't understand. You say, why do they care so much about these foreign countries? Why do they care so much about the people that are tens of thousands of miles away? Why aren't they caring about the American people? Why does Mike Pence sit there and say, and I caught this clip, we should have played it, but he says, we need to give more aid to Ukraine. And in the very next sentence, he says, but we also have to embrace fiscal responsibility and be pro-life. So you want more war, more spending, but also to be fiscally responsible. And oh, by the way, you're pro-life. How can you be pro-life and be a warmonger? Walk me through that. Please walk me through that, Mike Pence, or to any of these people. Please walk me through that. When President Trump reaches out to Kim Jong-un, they say, oh, he's reaching out to a dictator. No, he's trying to achieve peace. Peace is the prize. Do you understand that? And some of them don't care. Some of them aren't even smart enough to understand the juxtaposition of what I'm talking about here, and I certainly understand that. But you look at the people that actually are fighting back. People like President Trump, boom, indicted. Steve Bannon, boom, convicted, going to jail, 4 months. That sentence is coming up, folks. It's coming up. James O'Keefe, fired, silenced, sued. Tucker Carlson, fired, silenced, sued. What do all these people have in common? What do they all have in common? They're all fighting the same enemy. And if you don't get it yet, if you don't get where we are fighting a regime. We're living through an era of regime politics. And at the same time, the regime is going, they're on offense. They're absolutely on offense. They're not just going after these leaders. They're going after your kids. They're in your schools. Some of them have infiltrated your churches. When the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence can hold these rape ceremonies of Jesus Christ on a cross, having Jesus raping nuns, something reminiscent of the Spanish Civil War, and the city of LA decides to reward them for their activity. Do you realize how depraved we've gone? And then church leaders don't even call it out. It's up to the laity. Look, I'm going to tell you right now. As George Orwell said, if hope exists, it lies with the people. If hope exists, it lies with the people. Because that's how it's going to be. So there's going to be need to be 1,000 Charlie Kirks and 1,000 Steve Bannons and 1,000 Jack Posobiecs and 1,000 Scott Presslers. That is the only way we win. That's the only way. And that means showing up. That means coming down to the convention, getting active, finding out how you can be a force in your life. I want to check back again, by the way, on the status of those children in France. Arrest has been made. Suspect not on drugs or drunk. All four children remain in critical condition. I'm going to be updating that throughout the day, so follow me on Twitter. Well, I'll give you the updates. We're going to see, by the way, if Twitter ended up censoring this. Because, folks, all I need to say, and I'm going to keep saying this over and over, it doesn't need to be this way. This type of thing doesn't happen in Poland. Why? Because Poland refused to go down this road. So when you hear your leaders say, we need more migrants, we need to be more inclusive, we need more welcome, we need to be more enriched by diversity, enriched by importing the Middle East and the Third World into your country, this is what you get. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, you have my permission to lay ashore.